Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is a perfect guest and topic for this time of year. Well, it doesn't really matter what time of the year you listen to. There's golden nuggets left, right, and center here, but particularly in the new year. Today's episode is with dietitian Tony Marinucci on healing your relationship with food, emotional eating, and how to break up with bad habits. Cracking podcast to kick off the new year. Tony's putting out great content online. We connected first on her podcast, Tips with Tony podcast, and have been chatting back and forth ever since, going through different topics on nutrition and diet that we wanted to cover. And this episode, we cover so many things from Tony's backstory into healing her relationship with food and her body confidence, and then her reason for becoming a registered dietitian, not tying your weight or the way you look to your self-worth, habit stacking and the process of breaking up with bad habits when it comes to your food and your diet. Just because a diet is working doesn't mean it works, which is something that's very, very applicable for this time of year with the temptation to jump on something quick fix just to kind of work through the new year or get off the new year or Christmas pounds, which again isn't going to be the most sustainable method long term, and emotional eating and the pause method and some tools and tips and tricks to help you deal with emotional eating. So without further ado, here is today's cracking podcast. So glad we got to have this conversation, particularly at this time of the year, with dietitian Tony Marinucci on healing your relationship with food, emotional eating, and how to break up with bad habits. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Tony Marinucci. Tony is a registered dietitian with a master's degree in nutrition. She's been an avid lifestyle blogger for over 10 years and someone whose passion lies in helping people live happier and healthier lives. She's made it her mission to heal people's relationship with food, gain self-confidence, and find balance in their eating habits. She's also the host of the podcast, Tips with Tony, which I've been on, which I'll also link in the description for today's episode. And she's the owner of Diet Tips with Tony Marinucci, where she provides virtual nutrition counseling through an online platform. She's also the book of Once Upon a Diet, which we'll jump into today for sure. I'm looking forward to talking all things diet, nutrition, and mindset in today's episode. Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm really looking forward to it. Tony, we chatted on yours a while back and I've been dying to do this round because there was a few times when I know you were interviewing me and I'm like, oh my God, I want to get you to unpack this, but we'll wait and we'll hold up till today's episode. But before we do any of that, talk to us a little bit about your backstory and what kind of got you interested in nutrition in the first place.
Absolutely. I have a long story, but I'll give you the short version. So the short version is I grew up overweight and insecure, and wanting to lose weight and changing weight, the way that my body looked, was constantly on my mind. I brought it with me everywhere and it really limited me and how I saw myself, and I had very low self-esteem. So when I initially started to go about weight loss, I did what I think most people do: extreme restriction, excessive exercise, you know, cutting this out, cutting that out. And I learned pretty quickly that restriction wasn't the answer, it was actually part of the problem. So at some point in my journey, after all of the frustration, kind of hitting a dead end and feeling like I was at, you know, the end of the road and nothing was really working, I decided to stop focusing on how food might make me look and instead start focusing on how food made me feel. And when I did that, that's when I found the balance in my eating habits. So instead of me thinking about what shouldn't I have, I started thinking about what can I add into my life? More sleep, more water, more colorful fruits and veggies, all the things that we eventually know as you can create healthy habits around really help you set you up for a healthier lifestyle. So fast forward many years and I became a registered dietitian. I now have a team of dietitians where we help women who are struggling to find balance in their eating habits so that they can live a life of confidence and what we call food freedom, not stressed or worried about what to eat, when to eat, or how much to eat. You just kind of feel like you can trust your hunger, you can trust your body, you know how to navigate social situations, and that way you can just live an optimal lifestyle.
I love that. I'm definitely going to double back to food freedom and relationships with food later on in the podcast because I think that's really valuable for people. But I want to dive into the book now. The subtitle is one of my favorites of any book. You know, you've Once Upon a Diet is the main title, and then Why Dieting and Dating Have More in Common Than You Think, and How to Break Up with the Bad Habits to Fix Your Health and Your Heart. Talk to us a little bit about why dieting and dating have more in common than you think.
Wow. Okay. So there's a lot actually. So once again, I'll give you kind of like a couple parallels, but my book really, I didn't realize it's why I wrote a book, because I had this idea. I gave a TED talk back in February 2020. And when I had the opportunity to do the TED talk, I only had 8 minutes to speak. And I realized 8 minutes is not a long time. There's so many other parallels here. This is insane. So that's when I decided to write the book. But I'll give you just a brief way in which how dieting and dating are the same. So the first time I realized it is I was a dietitian for maybe about 5 years at this point, and I kept getting so frustrated, as I'm sure you have experienced as well, Brian, where kind of just like the clients before they started working with like myself or you, I'm sure you probably kind of saw them jump from diet to diet, hoping each one was quote unquote the one, right? They basically rearranged their entire life to make it fit when clearly it wasn't a good fit. So I realized, I was like, oh my God, this is where they're acting like Cinderella's stepsisters, right? Cinderella's stepsisters, like really, they just so desperately wanted to, you know, have Prince Charming love them back and it be a perfect fit. And they wanted the glass slipper to fit, but it wasn't a good fit. He wasn't for them, or they weren't for each other, right? And so many people are doing that in diets, right? Or whether it's a diet or, you know, following this rigid meal plan or, you know, following what your friend's doing, we're constantly looking outside ourselves because we so desperately just want to lose the weight, or we so desperately just want to get an X goal that we never really consider the path in which we're taking to get there. And we also dismiss the fact that, you know what, this just might not be for you. So it might work great for your friend, but it's not going to work for you, your body, your biology, your lifestyle, right? And so I noticed that in order for us to really break these patterns, we have to be both in like when because the parallel here is, you know, when it comes to like dating, I struggled with this as well. So even after I healed my relationship with food and found balance in my eating habits, I kept dating what seemed like the same guy, just with a different name and face, right? Same story, same situation. And it's because I never really clearly identified what it was that I was looking for. I kind of just, whatever was there, because I so desperately wanted to just finally find love, you know, coming from my past of being overweight and believing that my weight was tied to my worth. Like I just carried that with me into adulthood, and I was chasing the wrong thing, basically. And so many people are either chasing a number on a scale or chasing the, you know, the status of their relationship, but never really looking at the quality that's within it.
Can you expand on weight tied to your worth?
Oh, God. Okay. So it's so deep rooted. And I know so many people struggle with this. So really, it could be, you know, for me, unfortunately, I was told directly from family members, from getting teased at school, that if I didn't lose the weight, I would never get a boyfriend. Like, so I never got a crush. The boys that I had crush ons actually teased me about my weight. So I was like, that felt hopeless. At home, I was told, you know, from my grandmother that if I never lost the weight, I would never get a boyfriend. So that I like literally was directly told. So that's where I believe like my weight was tied to my worth, because that's what I was told. And I was, you know, I was like 9 years old, like, you know, like no child really. They just believe what they're told, right? You never question the narrative. But then beyond that, I'm from the United States, and growing up, I was born in 1990. So you guys can calculate my age. I was born in 1990. So, you know, around when I was growing up, I would like the 2000s, that's where, you know, Britney Spears was popular, Christina Aguilera, like all these celebrities that were put on the cover of magazines because of their body, right? And what they looked like. And then those who were not were shamed about it. And when you open the cover and you read through the magazines, it was kind of like, you know, oh my God, can you believe Christy Alley, you know, if you don't know who that is, the actress, like, look, she let herself go, or she lost the weight and then gained it back. And it was just like blatantly being shamed for it. So basically, like, I say this in my book, and I've said it, you know, a billion times before, that unfortunately, just growing up in today's world, it's almost impossible to ignore this idea or belief that your weight is tied to your worth, because we live in a society that tells us that we need to look a certain way, and that our appearance matters more than our characteristics and like who we are on the inside. And I really struggled with that for a really long time, because I just never felt like my outside was worthy enough.
When it comes to weight being tied to your worth, because I know there's a lot of people who will connect with that directly, or for me, I was the same. And when I used to compete in bodybuilding and do fitness model shows, it was the same. My worth was completely tied to the way that I looked. And for me, it was what I now language to use. I use as a junk value. It was something that just didn't support me or serve me in a positive way at all. But Tony, there's people in that position now who are struggling. What's something when it comes to the weight being tied to your worth that you know now that you wish you knew back then?
That's a great question. The first one I'll say is you have to separate your body from yourself. So your body is a part of you, but it is not all of you. And that's the if you don't change that belief system, it's going to be really hard for you to make progress. So you really have to understand that your body is a part of you, just like your soul is a part of you, just like your mindset is a part of you, just like, you know, your characteristics are a part of you. Your body is not all of you. And when you can separate those two, you can finally start to see, like, you can appreciate all these other really strong qualities and characteristics about yourself. But if you're solely fixating on the negative or on the parts of your body you did not like or the parts that you felt like were never accepted, you're not going to feel motivated. You're not going to feel inspired to change, right? So we really need to shift our mindset to focus on, you know, what part of who we are do we love and appreciate, right? And what are our other values outside of appearance? What are the values that really matter? I like that you said that it's a junk value. I agree as well. So I think that's definitely the first part of it. The second part, believe it or not, is although your body is not all of you, it is a part of you, meaning we also can't just dismiss it, right? And we can't take it for granted. And we actually, in order for us to eventually get to a place to love it, right? If you hate your body, to get to a place to loving your body overnight and believing that it is worthy of what you know, of deserving it, or it is worthy of anything for that matter, you're not going to treat it very well. And if you don't treat it very well, it's not really going to work with you, right? It's going to be a lot harder to deal with, right? So when we think about like love in relationships, if a partner doesn't treat you well, over and over and over and over and over again, like that's so not fair to you, right? And then you would never, you know, that's not a healthy relationship, right? So if you can't recognize what your body is able to do for you, what it does for you every day by you being able to listen to this podcast, you have functioning ears, you are hopefully, it sounds like, you know, hopefully those who are listening, probably maybe you're doing this while you're on a walk or, you know, you're at the gym, so your legs are functioning, right? You can breathe, you know, all these things we have to fixate on. What's that saying? What you appreciate appreciates, I think it's something like that. Like, you know, what we need to realize, like, it is not all of you. It's a part of you. At the same time, we can't dismiss it and neglect it and take advantage of it. And so that also means we don't have to go to the extremes to do that, but we can just show it care every day. And even if we don't love what it looks like, even if we don't like it quite yet, we still almost have to kind of like fake it till you make it. Right? You know, still wear clothes that fit you. If you have to size up, stop trying to resist that maybe you have put on some weight. That's okay. The more you learn to first accept it and kind of be honest with yourself and, you know, wear clothes that fit you, you're going to feel better. And when we feel better, we want to do better. But if we put ourselves down, if we feel guilt or shame, if we stay in that negative mindset, we don't want to improve. And if we do choose to improve, it tends to be in the extremes, which we know doesn't last in the long run. So that's kind of what I would say if someone's really struggling with tying their weight to their worth. The first part is separate your body from who you are and recognize that it's a part of who you are, not all of who you are. And then the second part to that is start to treat it a little bit more kindly. I'll just say that a little bit more gently, a little bit more compassionately until you can eventually have the habits in place to be like, wow, my body's freaking awesome. Because it is. It's been there for you your whole life and it will be forever. So
I love that. I love that. When it comes to the body confidence then and, you know, being kinder to yourself or self-love, whatever language people want to put on that. For you, particularly, Tony, when in regards to your story, was healing your food relationship the first step towards moving in the right direction with that, or was it something else?
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. 100%. Because without healing your relationship with food, there's so many inconsistencies and it's so hard to stay focused. And I think what people fear is that if they kind of, I'm going to use like air quotes, like let themselves go, like end the restrictive restriction, that they're going to end up overeating, you know, to the point where they feel sick, which happens in the beginning because our bodies are naturally always trying to balance us out. Right. So, you know, if you don't allow yourself to eat for many, you know, if you're restricting your calories or restricting carbohydrates or, you know, following something super rigid, you know, your body is going to, in your mind, everything is going to kind of want to bounce back from that. But once you actually you know, put all foods on the same playing field, meaning that there's no good or bad foods, right? We can sit here, Ryan, and people who are listening, they're not stupid, right? They know that, you know, broccoli is more nutrient dense than a cookie, right? So I'm not, but when I say when there's no good or bad foods, what I'm saying is that you're not a good person because you ate good, and you're not a bad person because you ate poorly. You know what I mean? Like, so once you can realize that all foods are on an even playing field and you focus on how you want to feel, right? Like I was saying before, you will find balance, and I'll explain how, right? If you're being truly honest with yourself, right? And when you say you don't eat breakfast and then you don't eat lunch and then you, you know, raid the cabinets at dinner, if you're being honest with yourself, you're genuinely listening to your body, you're going to take that as like, you know what? Let me try. If I eat, you know, a balanced breakfast and a balanced lunch, I wonder if I don't raid the cabinets at dinner, after dinner, before dinner, whatever that is, you know? So let me focus on how I want to feel. I don't want to keep over consuming at night. So what can I do? I'm going to eat more during the day so that I can prevent that from happening. Or I don't want to keep, you know, making my weekends a free-for-all, right? I want to be able to feel like I'm in charge of my food choices. So maybe you need to like review the menu beforehand and kind of just choose foods that you genuinely not what you think you quote unquote should have, right? And I say that to say because when you don't have an unhealthy relationship with food, you're going to be feeling hungry, then you're going to be feeling tired, then you're going to be feeling bloated, then you're going to be feeling like, oh my God, I overate, and now I feel bad about it. Then you might excessively exercise to kind of, you know, counterbalance that or purge in other forms. And unfortunately, it becomes just this vicious cycle. So once you finally realize that, hey, you know what, food is there because obviously, when we eat nutrient-dense foods, most of the time we feel really good, right? But at the same time, if we don't ever allow for, say, that cookie or that ice cream or that those French fries or whatever those foods that you may have demonized as like quote-unquote bad, and we never allow for them, well, then that's also not going to feel very good, right? Food is meant to be enjoyed. So once you can find that middle and you can really find the balance within that, you're going to start to see that so many other areas of your life improve, not only your self-confidence, but your energy, your mood, your athletic performance, if you're into fitness. Like, there's just so many other things that win as a result of you healing your relationship with food.
Yeah, I definitely was a victim of that excessive exercise after a binge, and I didn't realize that was literally rewiring my relationship with food to make it poorer and poorer and poorer every single time. Where, you know, I would go and I would grind it out in the gym after having a tub of Ben and Jerry's the night before, because I'm like, I need to work it off.
Right.
And, you know, I've changed my mind about that completely in recent years, but it's definitely something I had was a victim of personally. And worse, embarrassingly, I hate admitting it, but it's true, that I would project that onto my clients then as well. So if they were like, oh, I had a McDonald's last night, I'm like, all right, cool, here's a smashing finisher, get into the gym and go crush your workout. And I think back now and I cringe when I think of that advice, because I'm like, I'm just making it and separating those food categories more and more and more subconsciously in a lot of cases, because I'm like, okay, you need to punish yourself now. You ate bad food, you need to punish yourself now. And when I think about the language I used with people and myself, I'm like, oh my God. But again, I've done a complete 180 on that now in terms of food relationship. Again, we're always learning and improving.
We're always learning and growing. And I appreciate you for your honesty and vulnerability and sharing that. And there's definitely things I've said in the past that I didn't realize were harmful in the way that I said it, you know, when I was like fresh out the gate, you know, because I personally too had struggled, even as a registered dietitian in my earlier years, I was still working on healing my relationship with food. I thought I had it all figured out, but I really didn't, right? So I appreciate you sharing that. But I definitely, you're a great example now. So for those who are listening, you can definitely trust Brian.
Thank you, Tony. I'm curious, what jumps to mind when you think about things that you might have said or promoted in the past that you've done a 180 on now? There's probably a lot, because your content is really up to date with what I love it. Again, between the podcast and the Instagram page, for people who aren't listening, I'll link them in the description, so go listen and go follow. But again, you're constantly putting out great content for people and reevaluating your own best loved ideas. I think the best people online do that. But I'm just curious, like, again, I've so many, it's embarrassing when I think back of all the things I've changed my mind about. Well, I'm like, well, there's new evidence now, I think differently on this now. But anyone in particular jump to mind where you look back and go, oh yeah, that was definitely wrong, unsupportive, but here's how I think now?
So here's what I'm going to say to that. It's so hard because you don't realize who's watching, And so it really depends on the mindset of the person who's viewing and whether you would consider this harmful or motivating. So there was a stage in my journey where I was obsessed with fitness. It wasn't so much that I felt like I needed to get rid of the food per se. You know, it wasn't like I tied it to that, but I did feel guilty if I took like a work, if I took a day, a rest day, like I felt like I always needed to move. I would spend, you know, I was like tracking, I never really said this out loud to clients, but on the inside, like I was tracking every macro. I was doing like 1 to 2 hour strength training workouts. Like it was like I was training for a bodybuilding competition, but I wasn't ever signed up for one. You know what I mean? Like, so I was going at it with this intensity, but with really no deadline and with no goal other than like I was trying to get as lean as I possibly could. And so on the outside for probably my followers, you know, I felt like I was motivating them because I was always posting my workouts and I never took a day off and, you know, all that. But I'm realizing now it could have been quite toxic because there's some people like I don't want people to feel like you have to work out every day because you actually don't. You know, like looking like you really don't. It's, you know, it's really if you want to move your body, it really, and it doesn't have to be strength training. But I was like so into like lifting that I would like try to encourage people to like lift more. And I think it was just I thought I was motivating people. But looking back now, I think I probably was doing more harm than good or making people feel like, oh, well, now I'm never going to get there. Like, I'm not sure. I'm not. That's the thing. I struggle with that because I don't know if I was really doing right by them because in my head, I'm looking back now, I was quite obsessed, right? So if like you said, you don't mean to do it, but you probably are projecting onto others because of just in your what's going on in your own head.
Yeah, I've done that in so many shapes and forms. It's one of those things that the longer you're putting out content online, you get a little bit more self-aware of it, of how things are being interpreted and what you're putting out and how it's being misrepresented potentially. It's funny because I, just a side note story, we used to put up, and this is really silly when I think back of it now in hindsight, but back in 2018, I was training for Marathon des Sables, which is 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara. And I was training, like literally running 100 kilometers every week at the end of my strength training. So doing 20 kilometer runs at the end of workouts. And I would post up. It was complete chronic overtraining, but we got through the Sahara anyway. But I was posting up a 90 gram chocolate bar every day. And I remember one of my friends texted me and he was like, you need to stop putting up chocolate bars. He goes, I'm working with one of my clients. And she's like, well, Brian eats a 90 gram chocolate bar. He's like, Brian trained for 4 hours today. Like you haven't worked out yet. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, unless I'm putting up every single one of my normal meals and all of my training and then the chocolate bar for context, it gets completely misinterpreted from how people take it. So you kind of, you have those versions of things that come up. And I think it's important with conversations like this for those who are listening, who are following me, following you, Tony, following other people online, that you're never going to have all of the context. So don't cherry pick what you do or don't want to do based on that. But I just wanted to add that as a kind of a side note because I think you kind of gave me a nice little segue to it. I want to pull it back though to the food freedom and poor relationships because I have my own kind of views on this. But I'm curious from your standpoint, Tony, working with people, you know, registered dietitian, why do you think people's food relationship is so poor, or why do you think it's so prevalent for people to separate food into good and bad categories? Because this is something that maybe it's always been the case and just I wasn't aware of it because of a lack of online presence and, you know, being in the west of Ireland away from things maybe. But why do you think, or in your experience of working with people now for so many years, has it become more frequent and more prevalent of people separating foods into good and bad categories? And if yes, or even no, why do you think that is?
Oh God. I mean, it could be so many things, but it really does stem from like generations of people feeling like they needed to look a certain way to kind of fit the mold. And then kind of just advertising like diet culture. So many like mixed messages have kind of come into the picture. And I think because people, we all just want to be like loved and accepted if we really get to the root of things, right? And you want to be loved and accepted, right? So as a result of that, you look outside yourself instead of looking inside yourself. Unfortunately, that's just the world that we live in. So we get further and further away of what our body actually wants and needs and instead fixate on, you know, what the media tells us to do, what the magazines tells us to do, what our friends tell us to do, what our parents did or whatever that is. and we kind of just get lost in the sauce, you know? And especially now with social media being more prevalent, like you said, sometimes it's really hard to know who to trust, you know? And so people are kind of just following and seeing. And because a lot of people just post the before and afters and they don't really show the work that took, they kind of just like, or once again, are just fixated on the result, that they never really question, you know, the methods of how to get there.
You mentioned there, Tony, with the mixed messages online. I'm curious, is there any particular pet peeve that you see that is either just plainly untrue or something that really irks you? So for example, I really struggle with one-size-fits-all diets or things like point systems, or in the case of Ireland and the UK, SIN systems, where certain calories aren't taken into account, food choices aren't taken into account. It's like, just hit the certain amount of points, hit the certain amount of SINs. And I'm like, there's no context or nutritional education in that. So it's a kind of particular pet peeve for mine, although I get why people go for it. It's easy to follow and it's very straightforward, etc. But do you have any pet peeve that you see regularly online that either irks you or you just think is plain untrue, that's kind of doing the rounds on the internet?
Which one do I want to go? I think that in general, it's just a general, there's a few. Okay, so the first thing I'll say is, so many people are being told what to do but not taught. So to kind of go to your point, like, there's no real education and understanding. So therefore, they, you know, people are feeling like a failure because they weren't able to stick to what they were told to do because they never really understood why. Like, why are you telling me to eat carbs before a workout? Why are you telling me to eat protein after? You know, like, stuff like that. But that's like small compared to some other things. Like, I think my biggest pet peeve, let's go with this one. My biggest pet peeve is actually, like, if you're going to tell people to take this, you know, detox tea and lose 20 pounds and gain it back or whatever, like, people are going to fall for that and they're going to do it. And like, that's, at this point, I almost am like, guys, like, you should know better. Like, nothing is, you know, you're going to lose weight and you're going to gain it back. It's all water weight. You're just going to go to the bathroom and, you know, you still have to change your habits in order for you to like be successful long term. Right. So I really do believe it comes down to just creating a healthier lifestyle and just becoming a healthier version of you. That's not really following anything, but more so just like paying attention to, you know, how food makes you feel and all the things. But the thing that bothers me the most is the programs out there that market themselves as lifestyle changes, that like truly the marketing is like superb marketing, like that, like I could almost like I almost fell for some of them. Because I'm just like, wow, like they really are speaking my language. Like their videos sound like my videos, you know, like helping people heal their relationship with food and find healthier eating habits and all that. And so the part that what bothers me the most about those programs is because inside of them, they're just like, have this shake, have this bar, eat, you know, don't eat carbs, right? They're like, okay, eat at this time, eat at this time, eat at this time, no eating at this time. You know, they're just like, oh, now take all these supplements. Like, so on the inside, they're not what they say they are. And that bothers me because you have people like you, Brian, or like myself, who are truly wanting to help people make a lifestyle change. You truly want people to finally put an end to the rigidity and the extreme restriction. You know, we really want to help people. And then you have like these companies that have massive marketing that are telling you all the things that people want to hear, but on the inside, it's just another diet. And that's what makes me so sad. You know, because it's taking advantage of people, it's taking advantage of their money, it's taking advantage of their maybe lack of knowledge, and honestly, it's taking advantage of their hearts. Because at the core, like I said, we all just want to have this shit figured out. Excuse my French, but like, it's just frustrating when you see companies take advantage of that.
Yeah, you're giving me a perfect tie in there, because I think it's chapter 2 or 3 in the book. It's early on in the book. Just because it's working doesn't mean it works.
Yes.
Can you expand on that for us?
Oh God, meaning I think so many people are fixated, like if you're measuring the wrong thing, right? And so if it's working in the sense that you have a weight loss goal and the scale's going down, it's working in that way, but it's not working in the sense that maybe you are having irregular bowel movements, maybe your skin's breaking out, maybe you're constantly bloated, maybe you have no energy, maybe you're not, you know, you're anxious around food, maybe you don't know how to navigate anything outside of your, you know, your home. when it comes to food. And like, so there, that is where, yeah, it's working, but is it working? if we're being honest with ourselves, like, is it working? Right. Or like, for example, you could even have something that's mediocre, you know, it's all right. But like, the second question I have people ask is like, do I even like this? Like, do you like it? What's going on here? You know? So that's where we have to really be more honest with ourselves, rather than just kind of following whatever comes along.
Explore that question with us as well, because I think it's another chapter in the book, Do I Even Like This? Which I think I'm long-term listeners of the podcast have heard me say this to death, that I'm such a big believer in the power of questions, that, you know, you can ask the same question every year and the answers can consistently change. And I think a very powerful question with your nutrition is, do I even like this? Explore on that for us.
Yeah. I mean, everything from, you know, maybe the meal plan you're following requires like hours and hours of meal prep, and maybe you don't even like doing it anymore. And that doesn't mean you have to stop. That's what I think people like, if you don't like what's going on, you might just have to make a shift, right? So maybe that means that you don't like hours and hours of meal prep, but you also don't like not having food prepared. So maybe you now just have to shift by making, you know, smaller batches of food multiple times a week rather than one large batch on Sunday. I don't know. That's just a small example. But the better example is, you know, do you even like the food that you're eating? Right. So do you even like the workouts that you're doing? You know, because you, when it comes to fitness, you can, we want you to, any movement matters, right? But the type of movement doesn't matter so much. Yes, would we like women to do more strength training? Sure. But if that means, if putting in strength training is intimidating right now and you decide to go for a walk every day instead, that's a beautiful thing, right? So choose things that you enjoy, because life is too short. And, you know, if you don't like it, there's a saying I say, if you don't love the process, you'll be forever disappointed with your progress. At some point, you're going to burn out. It's not going to work in the long run. And it's going to feel like it's a waste of your time. But then now here I am leading to the third question, unless it taught you something. So it's all about like checking in with like, what lessons did I learn from this? If it didn't work out, if you don't like it, then make sure you're asking yourself, what lessons did I learn from this? So you don't feel like it's a waste of your time.
Yeah, it's that failure is feedback, that every, even everything that can be seen as or perceived that didn't work, I'm like, it's feedback on what not to do next time. You mentioned a really interesting point there, Tony, as well, just to pick up for people, that moving matters. And it's a little bit goal dependent, but particularly for weight loss and fat loss, I think one of the most underutilized fat loss tools is just basic movement. Because yes, strength training is brilliant. Like the analogy I use for females and males strength training is, if you're doing resistance training, you increase your metabolic rate, so you burn more calories while you rest. It's kind of like making money while you sleep. So there's a huge benefit to it, but it matters a great deal less for just general weight loss and fat loss, because that's about moving. Like you know this, Tony, we've had this discussion on your podcast, by just having some people move more and hitting the step count and making it and aligning it with their nutrition, they can lose a load of weight and they can drop a lot of body fat. Now, if you want to get stronger, if you want to get fitter, if you want to run a marathon or do a bodybuilding show or a bikini show, yes, your training becomes a lot more important then. But for general weight loss and general fat loss, your training isn't as important. It's just moving, because that will support your basic just calories in, calories out, for the most part, assuming you're making good nutritional plans. Again, neither one of us are calories in, calories out coaches, but they play a role in progress, of course. Talk about, what lessons did I learn from this? Because I think failure as feedback is a really important thing when it comes to nutrition and diets in particular, because too easy and too often, I've heard on my side, I'm not sure if it's the same with you, Tony, where people will not learn from past mistakes and then end up falling back on the diet wagon onto some other diet, or worse, one they've done before, not realizing that they're just going to end up rebounding out the other side. Talk about the importance of asking that question, what lessons did I learn from this, and then actually applying it with their nutritional plan or nutrition going forward.
Yeah, it's so important, because there are so many diets out there that look different, but they're just in a different book, right? So most of them are usually based off of restriction. So some might be really low calories, some might be no carbohydrates, you know, some might be only eat foods, but don't eat, only eat fruits from this list, but don't eat foods from that list. So you have to really be honest with yourself and kind of check in and ask yourself, why didn't it work? And probably one of those answers is going to be like, it was too restrictive, or it didn't take into account my biology. Maybe it included foods that you're allergic to or sensitive. I've had so many people tell me that their trainer gave them, just handed them a meal plan that like had dairy on it and they're allergic to dairy. I'm like, just individualize it just a little bit. Like, come on, guys. Like, you know, like, so it's really important that we're being honest with ourselves. So, the lessons you can learn, I mean, there's so many lessons, but the one example I like to use a lot, especially when I'm on a podcast, I think it helps, is so many people like have tried, like for example, the ketogenic diet, right? Or very, very low carb diets. And at first it quote unquote works, right? At first they lose a lot of weight, mostly water weight, as we know, but also, you know, they do start to look at where maybe there's added sugars, you know, maybe they're like sweetened latte or their, pastry in the middle of the day, or the handful of like, you know, chocolate M&Ms that they have, like what kind of without thinking or just kind of snack. Like, they start to pay attention to those things, right? But unfortunately, what they also do is they also cut out carbohydrates with their meals. So, and then they are not eating things that have whole grains and fiber-rich foods, right? And so they lose a lot of weight at first because they lose a lot of water weight, because inside of a carbohydrate is H2O, carbon, and a hydrogen molecules. We won't get too much into that, but carbohydrate, it's mostly water. So when you're removing that, you're losing weight really rapidly and it feels like everything's working. But as we know, now we start to kind of miss our favorite foods, right? But we never really learn how to incorporate them. And so the lesson there isn't that you shouldn't eat carbohydrates. We encourage our clients to eat complex carbohydrates, ones that are more fiber rich, things like oatmeal, sweet potato, any potato really, quinoa, there's so many that are great, anything like whole grains, lentils, beans, stuff like that. And the more you eat those, then like the more filling you're going to feel, the more satisfied you're going to feel when you pair it with some veggies and a protein and you eat healthy fats and fruits and all that stuff. So all that to say, that doesn't mean if you really want something sustainable, it doesn't mean that we need to cut out all carbs. And it also doesn't mean we never have those drinks that have added sugar or the cakes and the cookies and all that, but we are more mindful of it. And if we just limit some of that stuff without cutting it out completely, believe it or not, you will actually get to the results so much faster, because I know that it perceives to be there really quickly if you go back on like another low carb diet, but it really is just making the situation worse and it's actually slowing your progress. Instead of repeating that from going from keto to going to low carb to going to maybe counting your carbs or whatever it is, really just realize, okay, you know what? When I cut all that stuff out completely, I feel really deprived and I end up backfiring. At the same time, when I have a lot of it, I kind of feel tired. It's like, it's just too much. Like, I know I actually don't need it. And so rather than me kind of trying something else that's like very similar to that, instead, let me look at what I learned. I learned that when I undereat those things, I end up overeating later. So instead of me cutting them out completely, I'm just going to slowly, you know, incorporate maybe a complex carb at breakfast and then at lunch, and then allow myself to have, you know, a small piece of chocolate after, and then I'll have my dinner, you know, something like that, and kind of explore and experiment with that. So that's just one example, but there's definitely many that you could kind of learn a lesson from, which is, I think a lot of people try to do things really quickly, really fast. And instead, let's try like a slow, progressive habit stacking approach instead.
I love that. And it kind of goes along with what you said earlier about being told what to do versus being taught. Like, that's mm-hmm. basic nutritional education, and having been armed with that. Something as simple as, if you pull out carbohydrates, you're going to have less water in your body. When you step on a scale, you're going to weigh less, because that's the nature of a diet that removes or restricts carbohydrate. Where people, one of the things I'll try and do regularly, depends on the person, obviously, excluding overweight or obese people, that making sure you're tracking fat reduction versus weight reduction or lowering numbers on a scale can be really, really important, especially if you're not obese or overweight to begin with, because some certain diets like low carbohydrate are going to impact weight very quickly, but it doesn't necessarily mean your body fat is coming down. So that making sure that you're tracking the right thing. You mentioned mm-hmm. habit stacking there as well. When it comes to habits, Tony, what's the process for breaking up with a bad habit? I think that's really useful for people, because a lot of nutrition, a lot of diet can be habit forming and in a negative way, and for a lot of cases, what would you recommend, or what tips or advice or process would you recommend for somebody that wants to break up with a bad habit?
Ooh, great question. Well, first is just awareness. You need to have awareness. So if you're, and you have to own it, you got to admit it. You got to be like, I'm ready to change this, right? Because if you're like half committed to changing it, you're not gonna, right? So you got to be like, you know what? I'm done with this. And you have to remember why. Why are you done with it? How is it making you feel? What about that habit is creating a ripple effect, a negative ripple effect? Because we all know that one choice is never just one choice, right? One choice leads to another choice, which leads to another choice. So what is it about that habit that you're just, you know, I'm really done with this, because it's just not leading to, for, it's not creating, it's not helping me be the person that I want to be, right? So you have to pick a habit that's really meaningful to you and that you're committed to changing. Now, with that commitment, I think a lot of people want to go at 100 and they want to change it really quickly. You got to be honest with yourself. And it's often easier, when I say honest with yourself, like that it's going to take some time. So be patient. But it's also easier to break a bad habit when you replace it with a healthier one. So rather than just saying, like, let's see, maybe you're just getting got in the habit of having a glass of wine or two or three, now it's four, you know, like not like in an excessive way, but maybe like you just notice that you're drinking wine every night. You have like one to two glasses, but they're pretty big pours. And you're just like, you know what? I don't like this because I don't really sleep good. It's all, you know, there is added calories. Like I kind of just doing it. I'm not even really enjoying it anymore. You know, rather than just saying you're not going to do that, it will be a lot easier if you kind of like replace it with a mocktail, or you make yourself tea at the end. Maybe it's your part of like winding down, right? So if it's helping you to kind of relieve stress, then what can you do instead that's a healthier habit to replace it? But if you just tell yourself, I'm not going to do this, it's going to be really hard for you to kind of resist the urge because there's nothing there to replace it. You know, like you think about people who smoke cigarettes, right? Smoking cigarettes is a habit a lot of people try to break. And it's going to be hard to do if you don't, you know, have something else, like maybe chewing gum or getting like, I think, are e-cigarettes fake cigarettes? I think so. I'm like really bad. I don't really. But like something like that, like still you get the same sensation, because you can get a similar sensation, and it might be equally as you might realize, like you just needed that moment, right? So many people are acting on impulse and thinking that that reaction is going to help them feel better. But if they just wait a little bit, if they just kind of take a pause, they'll realize actually that it passes and that they're fine and that they actually don't need what they thought that they needed, and they can really break those habits. But it definitely takes time. They need to be patient with it.
From your experience working with people, Tony, what has been the hardest dietary habit that people tend to struggle breaking?
Definitely emotional eating. It's what we specialize in, because even when you know better, you don't always do better. And when I mean, it's just because we live a very stressful life and we have a lot of responsibilities, and we're trying to take care of ourselves. We're trying to take care of other people. But actually it's funny, because I was like, I didn't know if I should go into this because of time, but I'll just quickly share. When I said people have to pause, I actually created what's called the pause method, and it's to help people who are struggling with emotional eating. So PAUSE is an acronym that stands for P, pay attention. A, assess how you feel. U, understand why you feel that way. S, set up a plan. And E, execute that plan. So when we kind of check in, and we know, even though we know that we don't love overeating on the sweets at, you know, 9 o'clock at night right before bedtime, and every time we do this, it kind of just, then you wake up and then you're not hungry for breakfast, and then it kind of plays into just, you know, then you don't feel good, then you don't do your workout, and it's just like that's the thing that you're really struggling with. But emotionally you're really drained because, you know, you've been pouring everybody else's cup but not filling your own. And so we have to kind of realize that if we were to pay attention, pause, pay attention, assess how you feel, understand you're feeling stressed out right now, you had a very long day, you constantly are pouring out to others, you're not putting into yourself. Set up a plan. What are you going to do differently? What do you have to say no to? What do you have to say yes to? Maybe you just need to go to sleep in that moment. You know, maybe you just, and this is where working with a nutrition professional can be super helpful. So like what we specialize in is giving people the tools and the options based off of their lifestyle and what would be appropriate for them in that moment. So for some people, it might be journaling, meditating, taking a bubble bath, going to bed, changing location of where they're at. So whatever we create or set up that plan, they execute it, and then they're kind of assess and they kind of go back in. And then every time they feel like they're struggling with the emotional eating, they pause. So that's an acronym that I think people could probably benefit from implementing into their lives.
I want to follow up with one final question on that emotional eating, because I love that acronym for PAUSE. I think that's so helpful for people. When it comes to emotional eating, Tony, I know you specialize and work a lot with people in this. What do you think is a really underrated tool when it comes to helping people with their emotional eating?
Well, it's funny you said under eating, because it's that. So I usually do this when I'm teaching and I have like a board and I can like actually draw and stuff. I draw a Venn diagram. So guys, visualize with me a Venn diagram of like those two circles overlapping. The one circle is your physical hunger. So skipping meals, under eating calories, restricting your intake, right? Not eating enough to fuel your workouts, right? And then the other circle is the psychological hunger, the burnout, the stress, the fatigue, the pouring into other people, you know, just tired, right? Just like you're physically hungry, right? Then we have that Venn diagram is when they overlap. 95% of people who come into our program are in that overlap, and that's what we call the danger zone. So because they aren't fueling properly and eating balanced meals and nourishing their body in the way that it needs, it's very hard for them to even function and to understand, to know sometimes that emotional stress at the end of the night is also physical hunger as well. Like they're physically hungry and now they're emotionally hungry, and that's just a disaster waiting to happen. So what we like to do at first to help people with the emotional side is get them to fueling consistently, balanced meals consistently. Once they do that, now we can clearly understand, oh, okay, this isn't real hunger. I just want to crunch something, right? I just want to soothe. I just want to, you know, not feel my feelings. Like that's what this is. I know I'm good. I ate a great today. I ate all, you know, from all food groups, I ate enough, I honored my hunger, I felt good in physically, but emotionally right now, this is where I'm struggling. And so from there, you know, depending on the person, we can explore those tools. But until you really, that's why that building that healthy relationship with food is such a foundational component, because if you try to build anything without that, it's going to fall apart.
Oh, such a fantastic way to finish. And I think that's a whole topic in itself. Maybe at some point, Tony, around two on emotional eating, because I think we've so much to potentially unpack on that. Yes. But we'll leave it there for now, because I've loved this. There's golden nuggets left, right and center here for people. Tony, for people who are listening, who want to reach out to work with you, who want to subscribe to the podcast, who want to pick up the book, where is the best place for them to do that? Is it through Instagram? Is it through the website? Is it subscribing and following the podcast, which I recommend everybody do? But any links you want to give now, please do that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I'm everywhere. So Instagram at tips_with_Tony with an I. I have the Tips with Tony podcast as well. And you have to go listen to Brian's episode. It was fabulous. I think it's in the 300s, like three something. It's not posted yet as we record this, but it's around there. So you'll definitely find that. For my book, it's on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, Kindle, or audio. And to work with us, to join the 6 months of Food Freedom Program, go to tipswithtony.com. There's the coaching tab. You have to watch the video, apply, and we'll set up a call to see if you're a good fit.
Amazing. Quick question on the audiobook, Tony. Do you read the audiobook yourself?
I did.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. I'm so happy. It is hard, but I'm so happy to hear that, because you have such a great voice and I love when authors read their books. So that's definitely going to be a push for people, because I know there's a huge amount of people who are audiobook fans who listen to this podcast. So go check it out.
Yeah, definitely. I like to read, but I like audio. I listen to for educational stuff. Like I like to read a book be taught through reading. It's funny that I wrote a book about it, but that's just not how my brain functions. My books are like about like murder and love and mystery and
kindred spirits there. 100%. I get it. For anything educational, like I always go to audio first, and then I'll read my fantasy and I'll read my Harry Potter on my Kindle. So it works well. Tony, for everybody listening, I will link everything we talked about in today's podcast, the book links, Instagram page, podcast, the website, in the show notes on briankeenfitness.com and in the description for today's episode, wherever you are listening, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Overcast, etc. Click on through, check out Tony's Instagram page, check out the podcast, check out the book, and check out the website for anyone that wants to consider coaching, because I think you're doing amazing work, Tony. Again, loved my episode on your podcast too. It was such a great chat, and I've loved this one as well. So a perfect round two. So I'll also link that. This is going out, we're recording this in mid-December, so it's going out first week of January, so the next couple of weeks. So our episode will be live there too, so I'll link that in the show notes for people. Tony, thank you so much again for all your nuggets of gold. I know what you're doing is helping so many people, so I really appreciate your time, appreciate your energy, and absolutely love this. So thank you again.
Thank you so much. This is great.
There you have it, dietitian Tony Marinucci on healing your relationship with food, emotional eating, and how to break up with bad habits. So glad we got to have this conversation to kick off 2022 in style. Very applicable. Again, it doesn't matter what time of the year you listen to this, but I think especially applicable in the new year and around that kind of diet danger zone of pressing the fucking button and, you know, just jumping on whatever diet you can ahead of the new year. So really glad we got to have this conversation. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, hit me up on Instagram. Let me know, Brian_Keen_fitness. And if it's your first time listening, hit that follow or subscribe button for episodes coming every single Monday. That is everything from this week's episode. Catch you all next Monday.